You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange. Thanks for joining us. The JX starts today with a debrief, where JPR reporters discuss the stories they've been covering this week, including wildfires, lasers, and housing. I'm Maria Carter, JPR's news director.
I'm Roman Battaglia, science, environment, and politics reporter.
I'm Jane Vaughn, housing, homelessness, and education reporter.
And I'm Emma J. Nelson, JPR's intern for the summer.
And if you're an avid listener, you might not recognize that last name and voice. That's Emma J. Nelson, and she's JPR's Charles Snowden intern this summer. Welcome, Emma J.
Thank you for having me.
Well, first of all, let's get this off the table. What's the Charles Snowden Program for Excellence in Journalism?
Yeah, so Charles Snowden was the longtime editor of the Oregon Journal and the Oregonian, and he was incredibly passionate about ethical journalism. So,
as we all are, right?
Oh, yes, for sure. Everyone at JPR. Yeah. But in 1998, a year after he unfortunately passed away, his family set up an endowment for the program through the University of Oregon's School of Journalism and Communications. So now these Snowden interns are sent out across the Pacific Northwest in schools in Oregon and Washington to practice ethical journalism with their boots on the ground in a bunch of different newsrooms.
And you're a long line of Snowden interns. We have Roman Battaglia here, who was also a Snowden intern.
The first one here
the
at
first
JPR.
One at JPR. So Emma J., tell us about yourself.
Yeah, so I actually graduated from the University of Oregon back in March. I graduated with a BA in journalism and a minor in creative writing, so writing is essentially all that I do. I was raised up in Tualatin, and I've essentially just been moving down the I-5 for the past 20-ish years, going from Tualatin,
Don't go too
Eugene,
far.
Ashland. No, I'll settle here.
Okay.
It's good. We
okay.
like Ashland. And I actually just arrived in Ashland early last week and have been getting to know the terrain on my bike for the past couple days.
So what kind of journalism have you been doing up until now?
Entirely print. I worked at Eugene Weekly, which is an alt-weekly newspaper in Eugene, since October of 2023, and I kind of jumped around in a bunch of different roles while I was there. I did a little bit of whatever I was asked, including appearing on KLCC's On the Record a few times, which I'm pretty sure is why I got sent to JPR for my Snowden internship.
That radio experience.
That very strong radio experience. But my official titles at Eugene Weekly were calendar editor and reporter.
So not only are you new to JPR, but you're new to radio. How's it going so far?
Well, the wildfires threw me into the deep end. I kind of got here the first day to some smoky air and was briefly asked to read an emergency broadcast on the Neal Creek fire on Tuesday, and then have since recorded a spot on the National Weather Service's Medford office and the work it's doing to assist in just the work that fire agencies are doing this wildfire season. So I'm still getting my sea legs or my fire legs. I don't know how that would work. But I'm very excited to be here.
Excellent. Well, we're excited to have you here. And you'll hear more from Emma J. over the summer. Roman, this week you took us inside a juvenile detention center where a program using lasers is giving kids a fresh start when they leave prison. I need some more information. Tell me more about lasers, Roman.
Yes. We're not blasting the kids into, they're not disintegration rays or shrink rays or something like that. They're tattoo removal lasers. So I went to this tattoo removal session at the Rogue Valley Correctional Facility, and then I followed one person, Landon, an incarcerated youth, as he got his tattoos removed. This laser is really cool. I learned a lot about laser removal. It basically like matches the same wavelength as the color of the ink, and then laser is absorbed by that ink, which heats it up really hot and breaks it up really quickly, and then the body can come and kind of remove the ink a lot easier than, you know, normally. Normally, if you get a tattoo, it might fade over 30 years, but this just speeds up that process. And so, you know, I talked about this tattoo removal program and its history and, you know, why these youth are getting their tattoos removed.
And so why are they getting their tattoos removed?
Yeah, I mean, this program was created back in the 90s. It was sort of a meeting. The Portland Police Bureau and the Oregon Psychiatric Association were figuring out what to do about gangs, which was an issue back then. I talked to Griselda Solano Salinas, who works for the Oregon Youth Authority, and she was there and shared about how many youth they get that arrive with tattoos, gang tattoos specifically. And so they talked about tattoo removal as a way to help give these kids a fresh start by removing their affiliation with the gangs when they leave, even if they don't want, you know, if they don't want to be involved with the gangs, removing these tattoos makes it easier because then people aren't identifying them on the street.
And is it just gang tattoos?
Yeah, well, it started with gang tattoos, but then they kind of learned about other tattoos getting in the way of people's lives. So in my story, Landon isn't part of a gang, but, you know, he has a bunch of like sort of inappropriate or, you know, silly tattoos on his hand, and he wants to be a barber, and people are going to be seeing his hands a lot when he's cutting hair, and, you know, he has like a Playboy bunny and an adult film star's name on there, and it's like, you know, that's kind of – it's going to make it harder to get a job if you have a bunch of these inappropriate tattoos. Or some people have tattoos that mark them as a victim of human trafficking that are used as, like, these markers. And so getting them removed helps kind of remove some of that trauma associated with them. They said about 60% of the tattoos they remove are gang-related, and about 40% are what they call antisocial or human trafficking tattoos. And so I kind of report on the story because they originally had one laser machine, and now they've expanded and have two more laser machines that they bought last year.
So why are they, like, only doing this for juveniles and not adults?
Yeah, I asked them about this, and I think it'd be easiest if we have Griselda Solano Salinas explain why it's important to do this tattoo removal specifically for youth.
There was one youth that I remember that he has so many tattoos. And I asked him, and they were all gang-related. I asked him, why do you have so many tattoos? And he said, because I thought I was not going to make it after 18. So he was mentally prepared to die before he was, you know, an adult. And it's like, that's the mentality that sometimes, you know, is different when you are an adult. When they are very young, you know, sometimes they don't think about the future. And they might regret that they add those tattoos that now are impacting, you know, them getting a job or finding good opportunities.
So, you know, it's kind of that, you know, there are other free tattoo removal programs for adults, but the primary reason is that these kids are not making good decisions. I know that Landon had talked about getting some of these tattoos while he was on drugs. So, you know, they're kind of getting them, and then they don't know as much about the consequences of those results, you know, when they're kids, because they're thinking that they're just going to be a kid. And adults know a lot more about what they're getting into when they're getting tattoos. Plus, for gang specifically, I know that some of the kids are getting these gang tattoos as sort of like an initiation or peer pressure. And so it's not necessarily them choosing as much as it is being pressured into doing this and kind of reinforcing their connection with the gang.
So this sounds like a really meaningful program. Do we know how impactful it is?
Not necessarily. I mean, we have like accounts from people who've, you know, how this has affected them and helped them, but they don't necessarily have the data to track that. OA doesn't really have the capability to track it. They only track recidivism rates for 3 years, and then they also don't keep in touch with youth after their release. So it's kind of hard to find out how effective it is with data specifically, but they are working on building the capacity to track recidivism based on specific things. Like if you completed, you know, a college course or, you know, you participate in this tattoo removal program, they'll be able to see how many people who participate in those programs actually, you know, went back to jail later. So that's something they're kind of working on now, and then we'll hopefully have more data on that.
Another story, perhaps. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thanks for that, Roman. Jane, Southern Oregon University, where we work and who is our license holder, is planning a new housing project for seniors, meaning senior citizens, not college seniors. Why is the university turning what used to be dorms into senior housing?
So this project has been in the works for a while at SOU, and mainly the goal is to try to generate some revenue for the university by building this new housing complex, and then also have some social benefits, some community benefits too. They want to focus on lifelong learning for older adults. But the idea basically is that the university had torn down the Cascade Hall complex earlier this year. It used to be this cluster of residence halls, and there was a cafeteria that were basically unused. They haven't been used for a while. And so that was torn down. And the plan is now they have this about 4.3-acre site in Ashland. It's part of SOU's campus. Right now it's just a dirt patch. And the plan is to put a new housing community on that site for seniors, for older adults. Ashland has an older population. There is somewhat of a need for this. People seem really intrigued about it. It provides, you know, community and activities for older people and some money for SOU. And I also did a story recently about older adults who are being priced out of their homes and ending up homeless. So this is sort of also maybe a solution to that, and providing a place for older adults to have some community and a place to live on the university campus.
And so can you tell us what this project's going to look like?
I cannot, not yet, because it hasn't been determined yet. That's sort of the proposal phase that we're in right now. There are two companies that SOU is considering to build this new project. One of them is called Pacific Retirement Services. They are in Medford, and they operate Rogue Valley Manor. So if you're in the Rogue Valley, you might be familiar. The other company is called McCormick Barron Salazar. They're based in St. Louis. And the proposals, honestly, in a lot of ways, seem pretty similar. So they both propose having a wellness or fitness program, common areas, maybe dining services. They both talked a lot about lifelong learning, so maybe having a learning area or collaborating with OLLI, which is the Lifelong Learning Institute at SOU. So there's that continued learning opportunity for older adults. Neither of them have any plans for skilled nursing care, memory care, any sort of that medical part. They're focusing more on sort of independent living. But they do differ in the number of apartments they propose. So McCormick Barron Salazar proposed 100 apartments. Pacific Retirement Services proposes between 165 and 185 apartments. And so this week, these companies are making their pitches to the community in Ashland. I went to Pacific Retirement Services presentation on Wednesday. McCormick Barron Salazar is presenting this afternoon at 1:30 at SOU, if anyone wants to come and listen. There's the opportunity to ask questions. They're getting feedback from the public and basically makes their pitch for what their proposal is.
So what's next for the project? How long is it going to take till we see these apartments?
A little while. We've got a long way to go. It's still really, everything's written in pencil. You know, the representative from the Pacific Retirement Services was saying everything has an asterisk on it. Like, this is not yet determined. Pacific Retirement Services says the earliest they could possibly open would be 2028. 2029 would be more likely. Representatives from McCormick Barron Salazar said maybe late 2027, so they may be able to open a little bit quicker, but that's all to be determined. This is interesting. It would be the first senior living community on an Oregon University campus in the state, according to SOU. So that would be interesting to see. But basically, we're waiting for SOU to make a decision between these two options, these two partners. They're scheduled to award the contract sometime this fall. And then they still need to do some financial feasibility studies, figure out the details. There's a lot of discussion that's still happening. When I went to the presentation on Wednesday, some of the older adults in the audience were asking about how much it'll cost. And, you know, these people were joking about what the countertops will look like, and they are so far from figuring out those details. So really in the preliminary phase. And then also the goal for the university, as I said, is to raise some money, because the university is currently facing a $5 million deficit this year. And so this is one way for SOU to get some more income generated. So project is in the works, but it will take a while.
Okay, well, we'll stay tuned there. Roman, you also reported on a decision by the Eureka City Council that will cost them around an extra $1,000 per year. What was this decision? Why were we reporting on $1,000?
Yeah, they voted unanimously to stop using Avelo Airlines for city business. And there's two airlines that fly out of the Arcata Airport there, Avelo and United. Avelo currently only flies to Burbank, but they're cheaper than United typically. I know that the city spent, they said they spent around $2,500 last year on Avelo flights, but the council this week decided to stop using them and instead use United, even though it's going to cost them around 40% more in travel.
Okay. Well, you also reported that there was a local movement to push the council to do this.
Yeah. And I mean, I think it's, I mean, a big part of it is that Avelo is a contractor for ICE, and, you know, they signed a contract with the Department of Homeland Security to fly these deportation flights for ICE and transport detainees around the U.S. and around the country. And they took a lot of heat for that decision. I know that Eureka became a sanctuary city in March, which is like a safe space for immigrants. And then Humboldt County is also a sanctuary county, which was a voter-approved measure. And then California is a sanctuary state, so it's kind of sanctuary all the way down. So the council basically said it's the least they could do to uphold these values. And a lot of this is because this group in Humboldt County has been trying to support a boycott of Avelo entirely. This is sort of like a national campaign to boycott the airline. But, you know, obviously the city council decision is only for city business, but people have been trying to get more, you know, of the community to stop using this airline. So they've been hanging this banner over the highway that says Avelo flies for ICE. And, you know, they've been trying to do this thing. I mean, this is one of the campaigns, is trying to convince the city council, because this is one thing the city can do, even though it's not actually going to be a lot of money for Avelo specifically. It's something the city council can do to kind of encourage, you know, show that they actually mean what they say when they say they're a sanctuary city. So, you know, a lot of people actually came to this meeting to get the council to drop the airline, and, you know, it clearly worked. I mean, the unanimous vote was to drop this airline.
But to be clear, there's Avello's still flying out of the airport.
Yes, yeah, they are.
Well, that's it for the debrief this week. Thanks for listening, and happy birthday Eve to JX producer Charlie Zimmerman. You can reach the newsroom with comments on our coverage and suggestions for things we should cover in the future through our news tip line. That's on our website at ijpr.org. And you can find this program and more at jeffexchange.org or subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or your favorite podcast platform.